Linda Fairstein was chief of the sex crimes unit of the district attorney's office in Manhattan for more than two decades and is one of America's foremost legal experts on sexual assault and domestic violence. Her Alexandra Cooper novels are international bestsellers and have been translated into more than a dozen languages. Her latest, her 18th novel in the Cooper series, is Killer Look, and it brings us to New York City's Fashion Week. It is a great pleasure to welcome Linda Fairstein back to the roundtable. Linda, thank you very much for being with us once again. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. Wonderful to be with you.
Always good to have you here. So what brought you to Fashion Week and wanting to bring your character and characters to this particular part of the city?
Sure. Well, for me, as you know from previous visits, I try and take my characters, Alex Cooper and Mike Chapman, to kind of iconic places in New York City, whether your listeners have ever been there or not, or people from New Zealand who say they'll never get there, write to me. I think you can identify with real places and not just car chases and shootouts and action that don't exist anywhere. So there's a part of New York City, a part of Manhattan, that physically has been known as the Garment District.
Yes.
For 150 years. It's 1 square mile of Manhattan below 42nd Street. It's where sweatshops, as they were known, used to be, and literally 95% of the clothing produced in America until about 10 years ago was literally manufactured within this 1 square mile of New York. And most of your listeners will know from news and political campaigns that, sadly, most of that business is now being outsourced to very remote parts of China, of India, Bangladesh, where labor is obscenely cheap, where the conditions are quite terrible. And it used to be such a wonderful part of New York City. It's vanishing quickly. So I wanted not just the glamour of the world of style and fashion, but I wanted to explore the geographic territory that existed for a century and a half and is we're losing.
How much, when you look at the behind the scenes of Fashion Week, is that real and gives it a very plausible place for crime and murder to happen?
Well, it was a concern of mine, Joe, when I had my sights set on this district for so long. I have a really dear friend. Some of your listeners will know her from newspapers, magazines, and television shows, including her own. Her name is Fern Malice, and yeah. She was head of something called the Council of Fashion Designers of America for 25 years. She also helped create what's modern-day Fashion Week, the runway shows in New York twice a year. So she's been a friend of mine, fortunately, for about as long as she ran CFDA. I called her. I said, how about lunch? She obviously knows what I do. We met for lunch, and I took a notebook with me, and I said, this being fashion, is a $4 trillion business. T as in Thomas, a $1 trillion business globally. And I said, I'm planning to go into it. I'd love some entrees and introductions. Can you think of any reasons, any motives why someone might actually kill someone in this world? And Fern laughed. I had a notebook practically filled by the time the two-hour lunch ended. She said, it's such a competitive world. It is so cutthroat because the stakes are so high. There is so much money at stake in the business. There is so much competition between designers to capture parts of the market, the expansion of so many design companies to global markets, to the way other women in other countries and people with different religious backgrounds dress, all factors into it. So lunch with Fern, and I was pretty much galloping into the garment district.
And did you have any idea, even with this friendship, did you have any idea of what the business side of the industry was, the business end of the fashion industry?
No, Joe, I really didn't. I always start my research for every book by reading about the subject. So I keep a clippings file kind of for each world I think about entering. And for this one, I started reading more than 2 years ago and clipping things about the business end. So mostly stories with, that were in the Wall Street Journal, that were in the business section of the Times. There is a style section, of course, but and I'd look and clip from that. But I was really interested in business. And there are wonderful journalists who write simply about the business end.
Right.
So I had a lot of reading material. I tried to stay current before I literally go in. So the questions I'm asking people when I get access are not just stupid questions. They've got a little bit of foundation in it. But I really knew nothing firsthand. So research from journalism, from smart journalists who cover this topic, background from Fern, doors opened by Fern, and then into that world myself to do more research.
So Alex Cooper at the beginning of this novel is still reeling from what happened in the previous novel, Devil's Bridge, with the trauma of being kidnapped. And I was just curious in reading it, is it difficult to have sort of this, well, for want of a better term, kick-ass person being so vulnerable?
It was really a challenge, Joe. I undertook Eyes Wide Open. I knew I was going to do it. Once I made Alex the victim of a kidnapping in Devil's Bridge, I knew when I got her back that the experience would change her. It would be ridiculous if it didn't. So this book, Killer Look, is set only 3 weeks after she's rescued. And again, we writers like to evolve. We like to keep characters dynamic. I think good readers in the genre expect it of us. So I can't have Alex being static for 18 books. When I created her, she was a very strong woman, and that's an aspect I wanted to show. She had, at the time, a non-traditional job in the courtroom many, many years ago, and much more traditional now. So when I started her, I made her much stronger to begin with. And this was a chance for me to step back and see her in an entirely different way, and actually to see her the way she encounters most of the victims and witnesses she helps through the courtroom. So it was tough. It was tough to look at her that way, tough to reimagine. I had the fortunate experience of being thrown into the courtroom in this field at a young age, and the field didn't even exist as a specialty in the law. So I toughened up pretty quickly. Fortunately, never had the victimization that I've given her. So it was a nice stretch creatively for me to take it on and do it. And of course, Mike Chapman wants nothing more than to get her back in the game, as he would say, of being at work and functioning well again. And that was what I really tried to do in this book. So through the telling of a murder mystery, a classic whodunit, and
right.
A little bit, I hope, of a thriller.
In the terms of the job of being chief of the sex crimes unit of the district attorney's office in Manhattan, you did this for over two decades. So is that day to day, you could certainly make a difference and do work. Do you miss any part of that, or do you still feel you can make a difference by bringing these issues and these characters alive in fiction?
Thank you for asking that question, Joe. It is a great question. My colleagues and I really did feel that we could impact lives every day. I think that's what kept me there in that job for 30 years and why I have a real passion for it. When I stepped away, I continued. I keep what in many professions is the continuing legal education credits. So I'm still a lawyer. I still do a lot of pro bono work. To your question, I can put these issues in a book and educate a little bit about them in what is clearly meant to be an entertainment, a murder mystery crime novel in a
sure.
classic sense.
Yes.
But I miss that job with a big smile on my face every day. I stay close to it through pro bono work, through training prosecutors, all of the kids who worked with me are now grown up and have my job and run units like mine here in New York City and all over the country, really. So it's a really nice mix for me, but I'm well aware that the novels like Killer Look are just fiction, and that what really changed lives was the work that my colleagues do every day, and that's there's never been anything as meaningful for me as that work.
Why did you leave?
I've been there 30 years. I've been there from the time, as I said, that there were no units like this. And then 15 years into my career in the mid-1980s, I was introduced for the first time to DNA, as I now say, my three favorite letters of the alphabet, but never heard them sequenced that way before that. Was one of the people who introduced DNA forensically in the courtroom, used it to exonerate people as often as to indict them. And 30 years later, there was a personal reason, which was just that my husband was a good bit older than I, and I really wanted to spend time with him. And I would say the final deciding point was the fall of 2011 when 9/11 happened, just blocks from my office. I literally saw the buildings collapse. I literally lost friends in those buildings, and that decided me that it was time to take my personal life into stock, and that there were so many good people to carry on the work that we had started in the unit. So I stepped down 6 months later, after 30 years, very content that that we'd move things into place and that I could still keep a finger in that meaningful work.
Well, Killer Look is the 18th novel in the Alex Cooper series. It is out now from Dutton. Linda Fairstein, a great pleasure to have you on the program. As always, best of luck with the new novel, and thank you for sharing with us this morning.
Well, thanks. It's nice to always get intelligent questions, be on a good show, and I appreciate your having me back.
Thank you very much. Very nice to have you on the program. Again, Killer Look is Linda Fairstein's latest. It's published by Dutton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.